If there is to be reconciliation, first, there must be truth. Hello, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. You know, Jesus once said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." If we are to be reconciled to God, it can only happen through the God who is truth. And today, Kenneth begins part one of a two-part series called Be Reconciled to God. He'll join us shortly.
Hi there, everyone. It's really good to be with you again. The Bible text for today is from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20. Let's get right into it. "Now then, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God." And those last four words will be the title of our series beginning from today. This is the great invitation of the gospel, or the good news of Jesus Christ, in four simple words: be reconciled to God. That's the great need for man to be reconciled to God. And there are four aspects of reconciliation that I want to deal with. And they all begin with A, so it's easy to remember. The first two we're going to touch on in today's message. They are an appeal from God and alienation from God. And in tomorrow's message, we will touch on the third and the fourth, which are an atonement by God and an agreement with God. We are going to take this opportunity to look into this important Bible word and concept of reconciliation. This means more than the usually accepted sense of the term, which we understand and take to be a kind of restoration of a relationship which has been strained, or a friendship after a period of estrangement or even enmity. So let's see what the Bible has to say about reconciliation, and in particular reconciliation to God. First, an appeal from God. In the verse that we have read from in 2 Corinthians 5:20, Paul introduces himself together with the believers in Corinth as ambassadors for Christ. An ambassador is an official representative. He's vested with responsibility and authority. And as ambassadors of Christ, they have the responsibility and authority of Christ as Lord and King. It's as if they were sent to an alien country to declare his interests there. Now, ambassadors must act with a sense of dignity and diplomacy in all their dealings because they represent their king and their country. So in the same way, believers as ambassadors for Christ are to represent Christ to those who are not yet in the kingdom of God. And all eyes are on you as a believer and as a representative of the kingdom of Christ. You are all they know of the country. Sometimes, even when we are traveling in our personal capacity, we are unofficial ambassadors of the country that we come from. And people who have never been to your country will judge your country by what they see in you. So how much more we need to behave responsibly if we are official ambassadors. We do not act on our own. We do not take liberties with where we go or what we do. As ambassadors for Christ, we should always be mindful that those who do not know Christ will judge him by what they see in us. Now, going back to this text verse, we see that Paul is here making an urgent appeal on behalf of God. He says, "Now then, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us." Pleading is not a casual or informal invitation. Pleading and imploring implies a sense of earnestness and urgency. There's something important and urgent that demands immediate attention. So in the same way, I'm also making a serious and urgent appeal to you right at the beginning of this message, instead of at the end when appeals for response are usually done. I'm making it plain up front so that you can follow and listen closely with the end in mind. In this verse, we read that God is appealing and inviting us to make an informed decision to respond to the claims of the gospel. That's because He has created us to exercise choice through will. The call to be reconciled to God could easily have been issued as a command or an injunction so that we are to carry it out unquestioningly. But this is not what He did. Instead, He wants to win us by His love, and He wants us to respond by love. So therefore, He appeals to us rather than order us. A good illustration is to compare this with trying to get people to stop smoking. You can do it out of fear and compulsion, through the law, through the enforcement of rules. Or you can also try to do this through education and persuasion and conviction, so that people come into an understanding of the deleterious effects of smoking and they decide not to do it on their own. So in the same way, conversion to Christ comes by conviction and not by coercion, not by force. Because that only gives you an outward compliance. It lasts only as long as one can get away with it. That's why you often see people who have not really decided to quit smoking on their own will find the nearest spot or the next opportunity to get a puff as soon as they're out of the restaurant or the meeting room. Now let's go back two verses, from verse 20 to verse 18, and let me read that to you. Now all things are of God, who has reconciled us to Himself through Jesus Christ, and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. So you see, all believers are to be ambassadors for Christ, and they are to make the same appeal of God to others. Why? Because they themselves have known what it means to have responded to that appeal by making a choice of their own. They can give an explanation that is backed by their personal experience. The truth they share about reconciliation is therefore not only exegetical, that's a term that means explaining the scriptures, but it is also experiential, something that proceeds out of their personal experience of reconciliation. And it's something that people can always relate to readily, because when they listen to your personal story, they begin to understand how it actually can work out in the life of someone. That's the way God works. The most powerful proponents of reconciliation are those who have first themselves been reconciled. So therefore, we are given the ministry of reconciliation. Any true ministry of God has to be a ministry of reconciliation, a ministry which leads men and women back to God. Notice also that it says in the verse, we are reconciled to God Himself through Jesus Christ. We'll have opportunity to look into this in greater detail in tomorrow's message under the atonement of God in the provision of Jesus Christ to accomplish this reconciliation. But just in passing here, I want us to notice the necessity of a mediator in any reconciliation process. And Jesus Christ is that mediator. For it says in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 5, listen to this, for there is one God and one mediator between God and men. And who is it? It's the man Christ Jesus. Verse 6, who gave Himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time. So God reconciles us to Himself, but it's through Jesus Christ. And why is that so? It's because He is God's mediator. between God and man. Now back to our thoughts on an appeal from God from our text in 2 Corinthians 5:20. I think the most significant thing about this appeal is that it comes from God Himself. Can you imagine that? This is like an appeal from an all-powerful Lord and King to the rebel subjects and asking them to lay down their arms and accept His offer of peace and reconciliation. It's an appeal from God Himself. Now, we get subjected to appeals of all kinds and for all causes, and we do not usually bother to pay very much attention to all of them, unless it comes from someone really important or significant. For example, if it's a president's appeal for charity or an appeal from the king or the queen, and then we would take it more seriously. And here we have an appeal that comes from no less than the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords in all creation, God Himself. So sit up and pay close attention to this appeal. That's the first aspect, appeal from God. Now the second aspect we'll touch on today is alienation from God. Now if we have an invitation or an appeal to be reconciled to God, it obviously begs the question of why we need to be reconciled. That's a reasonable question. And the short answer to that is because of a rift in the relationship between man and God, his maker and his master. When did this happen? There was a break or a separation caused in the relationship between God and the crown of his creation, man, which was occasioned by the first disobedience or sin in the Garden of Eden. This was committed by the first man, Adam, and he was the federal head of the whole human race. And that is how sin entered as a heredity in humanity. Breaking the word of God or his commands always leads to breaking our relationship with him. So instead of communion with God, which was his original design when he created man, sin entered and caused an alienation, an estrangement to come between God and men. This is not a fable. It's the explanation of the blight on humanity that causes all the sin that we find in the world today, which has its source in the sinful heart and condition of man. Now let's take a little time to dwell on this important subject of sin, the condition of sin. Because unless we are made aware of it and understand what it is, we will just go on happily as before, not sensing our need to be saved from sin. So it's a prerequisite to salvation in that sense. The New Testament talks about the condition of sin in different ways, and here are two places that we find a description of the condition of sin in terms of alienation from God and in terms of enmity with God. The first is from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 18, where the condition of sin is described as being alienated from God. Let me read to you what this verse says, Ephesians 4, 18. Having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. This is a very clear description of the state of the unregenerate heart, the unbeliever. There is no idea or concept of light when we were living in the dark all the time. The understanding is darkened. There is ignorance. There is blindness of heart. And that condition is aptly summed up by this phrase, alienated from the life of God, in that verse. And that immediately brings to mind a book which is not so well known, but whose title has stuck with me all these years. It's called The Life of God in the Soul of Man. It was written by a man called Henry Scogol a few hundred years ago, and it was instrumental in the conversion of one of the greatest evangelists in history, George Whitefield. When God saves us, this is what He does. He restores the life of God in the soul of man. And in our sinful state, the life of God which was meant to be there was lost. And so reconciliation is the restoration of the life of God in the soul of man. In our condition of alienation from God, God is foreign to us. We don't know Him. We don't belong to Him. We don't feel a part of Him. He's a stranger to us. So that's the first description of what a sinful condition means. We are alienated from God. The second is enmity with God. We are enemies of God. And we find this description in Romans chapter 5, verse 10. Let me read that to you. For if, when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. So before we were saved, when we were in an unbelieving condition, the condition of sin, this is what it's like. We were enemies of God. We were against Him. We were opposed to all His words. We didn't like His ways. We didn't follow what He said. We are always against the grain of God. We are at loggerheads with Him time and again. But you may say, that's pretty strong language. I don't think I count myself in that class. I may not be on fire for God, but I'm certainly no enemy of God. I just live my life on my own. I'm neutral. I'm sitting on the fence. You say, I'm neither for God or against Him. I'm just neutral. But we don't really need to be a sworn enemy of God to qualify as a sinner. Listen to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, verse 30. He said, He who is not with me is against me. Now take a moment and think about that. That's all it takes. If I'm not with Him, I'm against Him. If we are not friends of God, then we are enemies of God by default. That's God's perspective, God's definition. So there's no sitting on the fence. There's no neutrality, no shade of gray in between as far as our relationship with God is concerned. Sin is an inward and inbred state of our soul. It makes us alienated from God in our spiritual condition. It also makes us enemies of God in our spiritual position. And either way, we are on the wrong side of our relationship with God. That was not how God originally intended us to be. He created us to be in communion and in fellowship with Him. And this is why we need to be reconciled to Him. God greatly desires it, and He has made a provision for it. Go back for a moment to the last verse we read in Romans 5:10, and we'll end on these two notes. Notice these two things. One, it says, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son. That's the means to secure our reconciliation to God. It's the death of His Son, that is Jesus Christ. This is the only way to satisfy God's righteous requirement for man's disobedience and sin, and at the same time, not contradict His own nature. That is the only way He could have this relationship restored without contradicting Himself as a holy God. So that's one thing. That's how we're reconciled to God, through the death of His Son. And we'll have opportunity to look into this more under an atonement of God tomorrow. Now, the second thing from that verse is about being saved by His life. Speaking of the state that we come into after having been reconciled. Those who have been saved continue to live by His life, the resurrection life, the life of God in the soul of man. Now, friends, if you have ever been in an experience which involved a strained relationship, where there is an estrangement between you and someone else, it's an extremely uncomfortable place to be in. And yet, in our a strange relationship with God, there are no irreconcilable differences which cannot be solved in Jesus Christ. This is the good news and the hope. You can be reconciled with God. I hope you have been refreshed by the Lord's presence and reached by His word to challenge and to change you.
God appeals to mankind through his servants to be reconciled to him. God is appealing to us to make an informed decision to respond to the claims of the gospel. And God makes this appeal because mankind is alienated from him. God considers all who are not with him in relationship to be against him as his enemy. So the Apostle Paul implores us to be reconciled. Thanks for that word, Kenneth. Times of Refreshing is a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Tomorrow, Kenneth Wong will look at reconciliation as a total change. It's not simply having sins forgiven, but having a complete change of attitude. So join us then for part two of Be Reconciled to God. And right now, we'd like to hear from you, and I have several ways for you to contact us. Send us a text message to 9431-3813 or an email to info@timesofrefreshing.asia or send snail mail to Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915714. All of this information can be found at our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.